Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. We have Ale Moreno, Stevie Nichol, Shaka Hislop and myself, Kay Murray, here in the studio. And we start on a low note. Karim Benzema has been ruled out of the World Cup. He picked up an injury in training with France and it means that he will not feature for his national team throughout the World Cup. Let's now welcome in Julien Laurent from Qatar with us. Jules, what can you tell us about this situation? What happened?
Hi everyone. Yeah, it's a terrible news, of course, for the national team, for France, for Karim himself. He was at the end of the training session behind closed doors tonight. The first training session that Karim was able to join in with the group, because since they got together on Monday, because he had that muscular fatigue, that's how they put it, with Real Madrid, he hadn't been able before to train with everybody else. Tonight was the first night. He started all well, and then towards the end he accelerated and then straight away felt really strong pain into his left quad, and they went to do a scan here in Doha, and a few hours later we knew that there was a rupture, like a tear in the muscle, and that he would be out for 3 to 4 weeks. So there's no point keeping him here. He can't play in this whole World Cup. We were hoping at the beginning that maybe he might just miss the first game against Australia on Tuesday, but in the end the French would have to do without him, which is again a terrible blow for the team, of course, but also for him. He'd been waiting 8 years to play again in a World Cup. 8 years is a long time for a player like him, and he's maybe, before, until the start of this season, he's never been in the form like the one that we saw him in last year. And it's a real shame that he won't be able to play in this competition.
How big a blow is this for France, Ale?
I think it's a major blow. I think that Karim Benzema gives you so many different things in the attack that would free a player like Kylian Mbappe. While Benzema is able to give you the movement of the ball and he's able to drop into playmaking positions, he can play the center forward position, he can be in so many different roles that then you have to pay attention to Karim Benzema, which then allows Mbappe to roam freely and to find 1v1 situations or to get in behind. That doesn't quite happen now with whoever takes over that position. I think Benzema is an outstanding player, we know that, but it's a player that in a moment of crisis, in a moment of pressure, we know full well, because we have seen it time and time again, certainly over the last couple of seasons, he can deliver that moment, that goal, that specific situation in which you score a big goal, you go through. And in the World Cup, once you get into the tighter stages, once you get into the quarterfinals, semifinals, all you need is that sort of player, that sort of moment who can score that sort of goal. Benzema is that kind of guy. I think this is a major blow for France.
Jules, who is the replacement then? Is it Olivier Giroud?
Yeah, Giroud will start up front in what looks like a 4-2-3-1 formation that Deschamps and the players have been working on tonight, up to the injury of Benzema and also yesterday. We put them like that. That was before the tournament. We just replaced Benzema by Giroud on this graphic that you can see on the screen now. But I think it would be a different formation. I think Ousmane Dembélé will start on the right hand side. Kylian will start more on the left hand side, and there will be no Fofana in the team. But it's a like Ali rightly explained, it's a very different team and very different dynamic if you play with Giroud up front, who is more of a traditional number nine, which, for example, an Mbappe has said before, the famous pivot line, that he likes also playing with someone like that. But it's a very different vibe also for the team. And when you think that Benzema is out after Pogba and Conte, that Varane is not sure to be ready, you lost Nkunku, you lost Kimpembe as well, it starts to be a lot. And also Deschamps has until Monday evening, if he wants to call a new player to replace Karim Benzema in the squad. So maybe a Ben Yedder, maybe an Anthony Martial, maybe a Moussa Diaby, for example, who's very good with Bayer Leverkusen this season. So let's see if Deschamps decides to stay at 25 or maybe bring another player.
Given those absences that Jules already mentioned, and now Karim Benzema on top of this. How do you see France in this World Cup?
I think France will get out of the group stages, but I'm not sure, quite sure how deep they go in this tournament. I feel that this is a more significant blow than you'd suggest. And while the argument is France won without Benzema in 2018, Olivier Giroud went through that entire tournament without scoring a goal. And you are talking about a Giroud who's now 4 years older, has got that record, so to speak, under his belt. And Antoine Griezmann, who is not playing anywhere near as well as he was 4 years ago. It becomes more difficult in the deeper stages of the tournament when you, as Ali put it, when you are relying on that one moment of magic or that one moment of consistency that Benzema brings, probably better than anybody else. How deep that memory fails me as to how the grid is split up, but it's not a good look, and I don't see them getting past, 16?
They do have Kylian Mbappe in that squad,
yes.
Though, Stevie.
Listen, I don't think anybody can turn around and say it's not a huge blow. I mean, it is. And yes, you can say, as Shaq has said, well, they won it before without him. But the truth is, France have got a squad full of quality going forward as well. You know, this is not a Senegal situation where they've lost Sadio Mane and all of a sudden you're going, well, this is a complete and utter disaster. There's just no coming back from that for them. We're not doing that. You know, you can still have a front three with Griezmann, Mbappe and Giroud. You've got Dembele and Coman on the bench. You know, you've still got ability going forward. So you can't say it's a complete disaster. It's certainly not ideal. I'm sure 100% Benzema would be one of the first names on the team sheet. But I tell you what, with the squad they have, they can change things around and play a different way.
Jules has got France to go all the way, at least when we did our pre-tournament predictions. Mm. Jules has France to go all the way. I'm wondering how this affects your predictions here, Jules.
Yeah, I understand what Stevie is saying, and I agree with him to a certain extent. It's still a talented squad, of course it is, but it's a very young midfield with players who've never played in a World Cup before, who have played especially Rabiot has played Champions League football, but the rest have played a little bit of it. But again, even in Champions League standard, they're quite new to it. So I think this could be a problem. Varane's fitness is an issue as well, and then obviously all the players that are missing that we mentioned before, because you might have won the World Cup 4 years ago without Benzema, but you did it with Pogba and Kante and Varane, who were all fully fit and performing at their best almost. So it's going to be tough. I don't think it's possible for France to win this World Cup now. I really believe that. Even if Deschamps is going to come back to a much more defensive approach. One, because it's what he does. And two, because with all the players missing now, I guess it's the right thing to do. But I think it's a really, really difficult ask now to see them going further than what. Well, if you finish second now in your group behind Denmark, you play Argentina potentially in the last 16, and after that things get even tougher. I just don't think so. And for Karim, just to finish on him, because I saw him on Monday and he was smiling and I said to him, how do you feel? He said, I feel great. I can't wait to play this World Cup. I've waited so long, 8 years, to play in another World Cup. And now this World Cup, which would have been his last, of course, is 35 at the end of December. And that injury prevents him from playing, and I feel really, really sad for him right now.
Yeah, such a shame that we do not get to see the current Ballon d'Or winner playing in this World Cup. Jules, thanks so much for being with us. I will speak more to Jules throughout the World Cup. We'll be with you every day. As for France, as Jules mentioned, they will be in action against Australia on Tuesday. Just a reminder of their Group D, Denmark and Tunisia also alongside them.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Well, FIFA president Gianni Infantino gave a bizarre speech today, shall we say. What was supposed to be a 45-minute Q&A with media ended up being quite the monologue. Let's take a look at it.
Today, I have very strong feelings, I can tell you that. Today I feel Qatari. Today I feel Arab. Today I feel African. Today I feel gay. Today I feel disabled. Today I feel a migrant worker. I'm not really a migrant worker, but I feel like them because I know what it means to be discriminated, to be bullied as a foreigner in a foreign country, as a child at school. I was bullied because I had red hair and I had these red, how do you call them?
Freckles.
You see, I don't even know the term. I'm European. Actually, I am European. Not just I feel European. I think for what we Europeans have been doing in the last 3,000 years around the world, we should be apologizing for the next 3,000 years before starting to give moral lessons to people.
Well, now let's get the reaction from Qatar and send it out to Alexis Nunes.
Thanks so much, Kay. Yes, we are back at this stunning set here in Doha. And like I keep saying, the actual football hasn't even started, but we've had quite an eventful World Cup already, haven't we? Whether it's injuries or just things happening off the pitch. And that Gianni Infantino presser, definitely, we can add that to the list. James, you were there, and the words that were coming out of his mouth had pretty much everybody shook it. What was the reaction for all the journalists there?
Well, the start of the press conference, these press conferences, the format is normally that there are opening remarks made by the FIFA president. So you're thinking he's only going to speak for sort of 5 or 10, maybe 15 minutes at a push. But he gets through 15 minutes, he gets through 20 minutes, he gets through half an hour, he gets through 45 minutes, and we get to an hour-long monologue that was remarkable. I mean, it was as if he'd stored up all of the issues and anger and resentment that he'd had over the last few weeks and months, listening to all the criticism about FIFA, about himself, about Qatar as a country, and he decided he wanted to set the record straight, in his view, with just an astonishing rant, really. Delivered and aimed in all sorts of directions. I mean, I think in the room, I think most European journalists, Western journalists, jaws were dropping over it. But I have to say, though, the Arab journalists that were sat in front of me in the room, when he finished, applauded him.
Yeah.
So there are two different views here, but overwhelmingly, I think the vast majority of people just thought, you know, this was almost like looking at a new Sepp Blatter.
And I mean, you know, I always say that things get serious when we have to bring in one of our top writers as well, in Mark Ogden. Augie, I know you were off, you weren't there at the presser today, but of course you would have seen it as well. And even though I suppose that the point of his words were to stop focusing so much on the criticism and the things that have happened in the past in the bid for this World Cup and kind of just let's finally focus on the football. But it kind of backfired, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that anyone's talking about the football now. And it's quite sad in a way that we've got Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, we've got Qatar, Ecuador on Sunday, opening game of the World Cup. It's a World Cup. And we're talking about a 50-something ex-lawyer from Switzerland who just wants to claim the stage for himself with saying some ridiculous things. Like James said, it's Sepp Blatter, you know, Mark II. It's ridiculous. Some of the things he was saying, for me, it's all politics. It's Infantino playing to win the next election. Now, he's in a polls right now. Nobody, for some reason, wants to stand against him. But by what he's saying, he's secured the, I think, the CONCACAF vote, maybe the South American vote, the African vote. Just like Sepp Blatter. Sepp Blatter delivered a World Cup to Africa, quite rightly, but that was part of his election plank in the 1990s, and Infantino's playing the same game. But some of the things he said today were just... It was really strange. It was very strange considering what's happening in Qatar in the build-up to the World Cup and all the things that have gone wrong. Gone wrong in the sense of human rights and migrant workers' rights and the treatment of LGBT community. Pretty disgraceful stuff, really. And he was kind of shifting the blame onto everybody else that, oh, it's your fault for reporting it, rather than the fault of the people that are actually imposing these policies.
Well, one of the lines, of course, that everyone was talking about, James, was the fact that he kind of likened him having freckles and red hair to some of the oppression some other ethnic minorities probably have gone through as well. Does that just make him seem out of touch now of everything?
Completely. I mean, the human rights groups were unanimous in their response to that speech, and, you know, in condemning the tone of it, trying to essentially equate the struggles of coming out as a gay person to having red hair. I mean, it just doesn't equate on any level. And look, I mean, I understand what Mark's saying there, but I think there's another aspect to this, and that if you talk to people out here, the way that business is done here, sort of big business is done, they talk about the Supreme Committee, but essentially the big decisions are taken by the Emir. And for the last sort of 4 or 5 years, Gianni Infantino has developed a very close relationship with the Emir in an effort to bring FIFA and Qatar closer together, more closely aligned, so that they can deliver a World Cup that satisfies both aspects, bearing in mind that this is the first World Cup in a Muslim country in this part of the world. And I think what we saw was the other side of that relationship. I think if, you know, on the one hand, Infantino thinks that Qatar have made a lot of compromises. If you think about the abolition of the kafala system, the introduction of the minimum wage, some extra health and safety, the heat conditions for the migrant workers. I'm not saying everything is rosy, by the way, but they have made steps. I think what we saw today was Infantino effectively being sent out by the Qataris to say, go and defend this tournament, go and defend us, go and defend the record that we have, the track record of progress that we have delivered since 2010, and really show to the world that this is not a tournament that should be widely derided. The politics of that are a different argument entirely, but I think that was a big part of the Infantino motivation today, because of course he wasn't part of FIFA in 2010 when the decision was made to host it here, but he has been an integral key figure in delivering this tournament and negotiating to the point where we are a day out now.
Well, I remember when we were here just back in about March, April, when it was the FIFA World Cup trial, and we were here with Gab Marcotti. That was something that they constantly kept reminding us, that changes have been made. Augie, that is the truth, changes have been made, but you feel like they're still getting lost with all of this.
Yeah, I mean, one thing you said today, everyone's welcome in Qatar, but that's not true. You know, the gay community don't feel welcome, do they? I mean, they might say they're welcome, but they're not welcome, because, you know, we know that if, you know, certainly if you're Qatari and you're gay, that can bring the death sentence. So how can the gay community be welcome here? So how much progress have they really made? I mean, look, we look behind us, it's an amazing skyline, it's fantastic, it's all very glittery, very shiny, but the issues that are in play haven't really changed. You know, but then equally, let's be honest, the European countries, the Western countries, the UK, we have our own issues to deal with from the past that are still there. The UK is by no means a perfect society. We see that every day on the news about, you know, people coming across the English Channel to go to Dover. By no means have we got a clean slate there. But I just think this element of Infantino suggesting that, listen, look elsewhere, there's no issue here. It's ridiculous. I think the guy's trying to win a Nobel Peace Prize. Some of the things he's saying about it, he's just, look at me, aren't I great? I've done this, I've changed this, I've encouraged the Qataris to change this. You know, I remember looking back to the World Cup in 2018, that I think Russia played Saudi Arabia in the opening game, and there's a picture of Infantino with Vladimir Putin and MBS from Saudi Arabia. Now, that just shows you the place that the FIFA president now believes he holds in the world, alongside these, well, dictators or these supremely powerful world leaders. And he's not, he's a football administrator. That's all he is. And he just happens to have been voted as the top man at FIFA, an organisation which, let's be honest, has had a checkered past. You know, whether it's Sepp Blatter or Gerard Haviland's prior to him. It's not really something you want to shout at being the president of FIFA, is it? Because it's not got a great track record in the past, really. Oh, I'm the president of FIFA, look at all these great people that have gone before me. Not quite.
Well, one of the things, of course, that Augie did bring up was the fact that he is, you know, about to be re-elected unopposed another 4 years. Interesting, he spoke about the potential of probably holding a tournament in Iran as well. I know Augie, I see him shaking his head, but I know, James, you, of course, are close with a couple of the FAs, especially England's FA. What's their kind of reaction, if any, been like to this and the potential of him going for another 4 years, and again hearing that we could probably see tournaments in Iran?
Well, on the Iran point, I mean, that is the ultimate whataboutery, isn't it? And he seemed to be arguing today that, well, just because there are some issues with the Iranian authorities or the Iranian government, the Iranian people should not be punished. Maybe we should give them a World Cup to show that they, you know, not all Iranian people are bad. I mean, it is the most ludicrous argument I've ever heard. It's almost as if the worse the behaviour is, the more we should go, oh, let's take a World Cup there, because then that'll solve all the problems. I mean, it's a very odd argument. Look, in terms of his re-election, I think the English FA, I think the German FA are adopting a position where they're not going to support his re-election. I mean, you're sort of, you know, you're flying a lone flag there, really, aren't you? Because you know that the guy's going to get re-elected almost no matter what. And actually, if you want to go, because of how political this whole situation is, if you want to go for a World Cup further down the line, or you want to try and get some funding, or you want to try and get something done through FIFA, if you're not going to support Infantino, that is going to be much harder when you know he's going to get re-elected and he knows you didn't support him at the time. So I think the English FA are in a similar position now. They've seen Germany as a major European nation have come out and sort of taken a lead on that. The questions are now going to be asked about whether they can in all conscience support someone who is clearly quite happy to effectively, you know, sort of gloss over all of these major issues, or try and just say to people, look over there, this is all fine, look over there, which is just not an answer and not a way of engaging and tackling these problems.
And let's be honest, having a working relationship with Infantino has not exactly helped the FA, because they haven't got a chance to work up in 2030. They pulled out of that bid, the British Isles bid, because they're basically told that nobody wants the British Isles to win it, nobody wants England to win it. So being close to Infantino, supporting Infantino, has been pretty worthless for the FA. And I think if the German FA have been strong enough to come out and say we're not supporting the English FA, are a very powerful FA, it's the home of the Premier League, take a stand and say, look, this guy isn't right for the world football. Time to make a change. It's only, what, 5-6 years since Sepp Blatter was moved on, and Infantino was meant to be the fresh, blowing a new wind, a new air of honesty and change. It's not happened.
And what a statement it would be from those FAs, from multiple FAs, if they were to say to the guy whose argument is, look, there's basically problems everywhere, so how could we ever stage a World Cup anywhere? So, you know, let's just all get on with it. If we said, well, actually, we're going to step back from this and say, we don't think that's good enough. We're going to wait for a candidate who's actually prepared to essentially have a stronger sort of moral ethic about how he operates and runs the big organisation.
Yeah, well, like I said, never a dull day here, and the football has not even started. Thanks, as always, to James Ollie and Mark Ogden. Back to UK.
Thanks, Alexis. Yeah, you can keep up to date with everything that's going on in the World Cup by subscribing to our YouTube page. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But it's the odds to win the World Cup that I would like to talk about here, because Brazil are the tournament favourites. They have not won the World Cup since 2002, but 20 years on, many have them going on to win it all again, especially the odds makers. So let's now welcome in our colleague Gustavo Hoffmann from ESPN Brazil. Gustavo, it is great to have you with us. Let's first start by getting you to take us through how the starting 11 will look, in your opinion, or should look for Brazil in this World Cup.
Hello, everybody. Good evening. Well, we have some doubts, but I think that the most probable formation for Brazil will be with Lucas Paquetá playing as a left winger, and Fred playing beside Casemiro in the midfield. Brazil plays nowadays in a 4-4-2 formation. That's something taught to be around Neymar. Everything in Brazil nowadays is taught to make Neymar better at each game. What we're seeing now, Alisson, Danilo, Marquinhos, Thiago Silva, and Alexandro, Rafinha, Casemiro, and here's the doubt, because we can also have Paquetá playing as a center midfield beside Casemiro, and we would have Vinicius Jr. playing as a left winger, but I don't think that this is going to happen, because Tite and everybody who works with Tite, they think that Serbia is the strongest team in the group to play against Brazil. So everybody in Brazil thinks that Serbia will also attack Brazil. Different from Switzerland, for example. Against Switzerland, I think that Vinicius Jr. can start the match. But against Serbia, I don't think so. But we can have this option with Paquetá playing in the center midfield. Actually, Brazil has just arrived here in Doha 3 hours ago. Tomorrow we have the first training session here in Doha. In the last 5 days, Brazil was training in Turin, in Italy, and we had no clothes, and we had nothing to see the team. We had nothing to imagine actually what team will start against Serbia. From tomorrow till the start of the match, we're going to see some things for sure at the training sessions, but I think that what we saw with Paquetá playing in the left, it's the most probable formation.
What do you think of that, Ale?
Well, I understand what Gustavo is saying, and it makes all the sense in the world from the perspective of Tite, that if he thinks that Serbia is the strongest opponent, that you would be a little bit more conservative. If I were Tite, I would play it differently. I would certainly have Vini Jr. play on the left-hand side, give freedom to Neymar to play underneath Richarlison, Rafinha pushed up on the right-hand side, and then Paquetá given balance playing alongside Casemiro. If you have the players in the attack that Brazil does, and in the sort of level in which Vini Jr. has been playing, you put him out there on the field. This guy can make a difference, and I think he can have a really, really productive World Cup for you if you allow him to be that sort of player. If everybody's paying attention to Neymar in the attack, that's going to give Vini Jr. 1v1 situations on the outside, which is what you want if you're a teacher. But in order to do that, you have to be willing to sacrifice some things in the midfield, and I'm just not quite sure that in the first game of the World Cup, Tite will be able to do that. I don't think he's going to bring himself to that sort of position. I think he's going to be more conservative. If I were him, I would play it differently.
Gustavo, I'm interested to know your thoughts on Neymar and the feeling in Brazil on Neymar and the form that we've seen him in this season, because he really wants to win the World Cup this time around, doesn't he?
Yes. We have Neymar at this World Cup much more focused. We can see that. We can, including for his performance playing for Paris Saint-Germain this season. He's playing very well. He's a technical leader of Brazil. And I think that Tite nowadays knows that you cannot expect something else from Neymar besides his technical difference in the field. Why am I saying this? Because in the past, Tite tried to make Neymar one of the leaders of this team, and he's not a leader. He's a player who's, for me, is the best player in Brazil. He's not playing as the best player. For me, Vini Jr. is the best player nowadays playing this season. But Neymar is a very technical player. He knows that he can make the difference. And as I said, he's very focused, much more than in 2018. And he knows his role. He knows his role for the team. He knows his role for the country. In the last month, we had some trouble in Brazil because everything that was happening in the politicals. Neymar took a political side in Brazil, but I think that the public in Brazil, the people in Brazil now, is with the national team and knows that Brazil can win this World Cup.
Xhaka, you've been critical of Neymar in the past.
Yeah. And I think deservedly so. And this is an opportunity for him to kind of address a lot of those issues. Those issues that we saw 4 years ago. And he's coming into this tournament, playing wonderful football for PSG, understanding his role and responsibilities with this Brazil national team, and understanding exactly what's at stake for Brazil and for his own legacy. And in all honesty, as you look at Brazil and you wonder how they set up, what gets the best out of Neymar, I keep going back to Brazil's last game against Tunisia, where he played in that little half space just under Richarlison. And I thought the understanding between him and Richarlison, the exchanges, was just something to behold. And that's where I feel he can find space, he can find freedom, and as Gustavo describes him, the most technical player that Brazil has, and I don't think anybody will argue that, one of the most technical players in world football. If he finds those little half yards of space, if he has that support in front of him with Richarlison, players either side, whether it's Vini Jr. or Rafinha, I think Neymar, if he has his head screwed on, as we hope and we expect, he will be simply unplayable. And that's where I would like to see him play. I would like to see this Brazil team play with the kind of attacking freedom that we know of Brazil and we've come to love, and less of the little bit more pragmatic than maybe we've seen in World Cups gone.
Stevie, you've got them to win it all. Mm. Why?
Why? Well, this might sound a little strange, but why? And it could be the thing that trips them up as well. You know, if any team should know that you have to be able to defend to win a World Cup as well as attack, it should be Brazil. In 82, they were miles ahead of everybody. Mm. But they couldn't defend. And they end up losing to Italy. And the best team maybe that was ever put together didn't win a World Cup. And I look at this team and I think the same thing. You know, we're talking about, does Neymar play in the hole and does Vinny play in the left? And we've got all these questions about going forward. I think if you get a bag of balls and throw six up, if you're going to play with six of them going forward, and just take whatever ones, because they're that good. But the problems they have are defensively. You know, Alessandro and Danilo, if they start, in my opinion, are poor defenders. And that's where the problems are. I have no problem with Silva and Marquinhos, but if anything happens to one of them, particularly Silva, you're looking at Militao stepping in there, who's actually played fullback as well.
You know you're making an argument for Brazil to win it, right?
Well, I just think it's too easy to talk about Brazil going forward when they have got problems, in my opinion, that haven't surfaced yet. This team's 15 games undefeated. They've only lost 5 goals in 15 games, which doesn't suggest they've got a problem defensively, right? But if you look at the two fullbacks, whether it's Dani Alves or Danilo or Alessandro or Ali Telles or anybody else, if you're playing against them, that's who you get after. That's where you beat Brazil. Now, and so if they don't take care of that, that's going to cost them the World Cup. The same as it did in 82 with easily the best team. Because I think Brazil are the best team right now.
What I would say about that is that because you're so talented going forward, you won't see from Brazil what you have seen in the past with those outside backs being pushed so high up the field. You're not seeing Cafu running down the right-hand side. You're not seeing Dani Alves running down the right-hand side. That's not going to play. By the way, if Dani Alves is playing for Brazil, they're in trouble. Okay, if Dani Alves finds himself his way onto the field, Brazil are in trouble. So Alessandro and Danilo are not expected to do this back and forth, because Rafinha can do that back and forth. Vinicius can do that back and forth. They're going to go attack. They're going to dictate the pace of the game and the terms of the game. And then whenever there's an opportunity for Danilo to get forward, he'll do that. Whenever there's an opportunity for Alessandro to get forward, he'll do that. But they're not expected to do so because they have so much talent already ahead of them.
Gustavo, what's the concerns about Brazil's defence, if there are any?
Our weakest position, no doubt, is the left back, for sure. Because Alexandro isn't having a brilliant season playing for Juventus. He's also playing as a third defender. Juventus plays with three defenders. In the last match, they play with Danilo, Bremer and Alexandro. Both fullbacks of Brazil playing as a center back. One of these three center backs. And Alexandro is not playing so well. Alex Telles also. Alex Telles had to leave Manchester United to play for Sevilla to try to have some minutes. And he's playing some minutes with Acuña also from Argentina. So our left backs are not in an excellent season. In the right, Danilo is a very strong player. Very, very experienced player. And the way Brazil plays, as Alejandro has said, our wide open play in the offense is with Rafinha on the right. If Vini plays, with Vini on the left. The fullbacks of Brazil, when Brazil starts playing from the back, they play in the center. Like Brazil starts to play with a 3-2-5 formation or 3-3-4 formation. So Alexandro plays in the center. Danilo starts the playing with the two center backs of Brazil. That's the way Tite thinks soccer. That's the way Tite is trying to make this team play. Of course, that when Brazil plays against Switzerland, Danilo will have more space. Alexandre will have more space also. But the idea of Brazil nowadays to attack with six to eight players is with Rafinha and Vinicius or Paquetá playing in the wide open in the office. But for sure that the fullbacks, and I agree with you, our fullbacks are the weakest points of Brazil.
So Gustavo, what's the feeling back in Brazil then? Is optimism high? Are they expected to win the World Cup this time around?
Yes, yes, yes. People are very confident. The optimism is very high in Brazil. And you know that when Brazil goes to a World Cup with too much optimism, people also say, we don't like that. We don't like to be so optimistic about Brazil chances. But I think that everybody agrees that Brazil is, if it is not the most favorite team, one of the most favorite teams, for me, Brazil and Argentina are the two best teams, the two best national teams playing nowadays. And because Brazil is always favorites, it's very common for us to say that. But I think that Brazil has played very well in the last month. So Brazil arrives in the World Cup as one of the favorite or the main favorite because has played very well. If we think about the beginning of Brazil's national team, I think that when we had the qualifying for the World Cup 2018, Brazil was playing very well. That was the best Brazilian team with Tite. Then we had the World Cup. We had some bad times after the World Cup. Then Brazil gets better again, wins the Copa America. After that, lose the Copa America in Brazil for Argentina in Maracanã. And after that Copa America, we had an event that changed everything for Brazil, and which makes Brazil arrives here in Qatar so strong. It was the appearance of Vinicius Junior, Rafinha and Antony playing very well for Brazil. From that to now, we have a team that is getting stronger, is getting faster. That changed Brazil because Brazil could compete with any team with that before them, before Vinicius, before Rafinha, before Antony. But they changed our offense way. Neymar got better. Neymar got more freedom, as Chaka has said. This 4-4-2 was not the favorite formation for Tite. The 4-4-2 formation has begun with this team because of these attackers that I mentioned.
Great to hear you, Gustavo. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll no doubt hear more from you throughout the World Cup. And we'll be hearing more from Gavin Jules, the latest podcast coming from Qatar.
What's happening?
In the latest edition, they are talking about their favourites, their dark horses and the teams that they are worried about. Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal are training in Qatar amidst the backdrop of all the reports about Manchester United looking at ways to terminate his contract with the club. Right now, it doesn't seem to be bothering the player, and no doubt the talk will continue about everything that's happened with Cristiano Ronaldo and the club. And there's been a lot more talk about Portugal and the situation with Cristiano Ronaldo from our team in Qatar. Let's send it back out to Alexis Nunes to hear more on what they have to say about the situation.
Well, Nadim is back with me, as well as Mark Ogden. And guess what we're talking, boys? Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo. Portugal were in training for the first time today in Doha. So, of course, everyone is still talking about that interview, Augie, and the reports that Man United are moving forward with trying to terminate his contract. What's the latest on that?
Well, yeah, now that he's here, so I suppose the story's moved on a little bit. So he's now focusing purely on the World Cup rather than focusing on himself, as we say. The situation right now is that United are trying to find a way to move him out of the club, and I think it will boil down to money. It always does, you know.
Yeah.
He's got 6 months left in his contract. United will feel that he hasn't earned the right to be paid that money because he hasn't, you know, performed, and he has on one occasion refused to come as a substitute, and now he's spoken out against the club and the manager and the Glazers. So United may feel that there are grounds to dismiss him on breach of contract, but we've seen this before. I mean, Nader might remember this when Carlos Tevez had a situation at Man City. It was very difficult for City to pin on him what they wanted to, so it didn't really become a gross misconduct in the end. So it's very much a legal situation now. It's where the lawyers are into it. And it'll become down to, I'd imagine, at the end of the day, they'll agree a certain amount of payoff. But you won't see Cristiano Ronaldo in a Man United shirt again. The Magnificent Seven at Man United is no more. Not for him, anyway.
Well, I'm sure some hearts broke, definitely, hearing that.
I felt a bit of sadness in him.
I felt a bit of sadness.
Well.
You know, I feel sadness throughout this entire debacle. And with that said, you mentioned Carlos Tevez at Manchester City. This isn't the first time that a big name and a great player, an iconic player, has left a club under bitter circumstances. But, Nadim, now we touched on whether this taints Ronaldo's legacy overall. And you did say for Manchester United fans, possibly, but overall as a player, maybe not. But has he now run the risk of everybody remembering him now for this bitter exit at Manchester United than anything else?
I think, from my perspective, I think for the United fans, yes. But for fans of Ronaldo, who are plentiful, as we can see on social media and just the way that we talk about football in general.
Why are you looking at me that hard?
Because you know. Perhaps it doesn't make as big a difference as we think. I think when you look at the success that he's had throughout his career, his rise, the way he sustained his legacy, the fact he's in a discussion of being one of the best players to have ever played the game, then this moment itself will feel a deeply personal one to the fans associated with Manchester United. But for the people who don't have that connection with the football club, they might just perceive it as a player trying to leave because they're unhappy with how things are going.
Yeah.
And that happens everywhere. So I think from a legacy standpoint, it takes away some of the shine, potentially, but the guy scored 700 goals.
Mm.
Like, it's not 100 or 200, it's like 700 goals, and he's won what he's won. And he's, as I say in the conversation, been one of the best ever, so the legacy might be slightly harmed, but the legacy in itself is one which is only comparable, essentially, to one person in his generation.
And, Augie, just back to the contract talks and possibly thinking of where he could go. As Nadim said, this is still Cristiano Ronaldo, you know. He's still one of the best to just have ever played the game, or probably one of the best of our generations as well, along with Lionel Messi. We spoke about it with Jules yesterday, that he's still Cristiano Ronaldo. If he takes the payout, who could probably get him? Where do you think would be best suited for him that can afford him?
This is a problem. You know, when he left Juventus over 12 months ago now, the only club that wanted him in the end was Man United. Juventus couldn't get rid of him. Now, Man United.
What about MLS or?
I just don't know about MLS. I just don't know if the money's there. Ronaldo earns absolutely massive money. And wherever he goes, he's going to take a pay cut. Nobody's going to pay him £500,000 a week. Not happening. But let's be honest, a year ago, nobody else wanted him. Man United were the only club that were naive enough to take him back. You know, the big clubs out there didn't want to touch him. So 12 months on, 18 months on, you come to January. Now, he's 38 in February. He earns a lot of money. He's no longer the player he was. He scored 3 goals all season. And he's also a problem. He's also a disruptive force in the dressing room. We've seen that at United now. He's a problem for the manager. He's a problem for the players. And he's not performing as he was. So that's quite a toxic combination. Big money, old, not performing, problem in the dressing room. So, seriously.
Old. Nadim's getting worried because Nadim's approaching that age.
But I'm not there yet.
For a
not
football,
there yet, but for 2 years or so.
For a footballer.
But he is a footballer.
But he
no,
could.
I'm not. I'm a broadcaster. I'm a very young broadcaster. I understand exactly what Mark's saying. And it's true because, you know, this is the reality of being a footballer that gets older. No matter how good you think you are, at some point you'll be perceived differently to that because of how old that you are. Like, Ronaldo at 38 is capable of scoring 20 goals in any particular season, but most clubs are building for the future now. And they'll look at their investment and think, is this a long-term investment for us? Will this see us be successful in 1 year, two years, three, 4 years' time? The answer is probably not, yeah. Because you don't want to rely upon somebody that's 40, 42 years of age to do so. So even though everyone knows how good he potentially is, and he knows how good he is, he's not the one that sort of drives the market anymore.
Yeah, and look, the comparison is Zlatan. Zlatan, what is he, 40-41 now? He's at Milan and he's had a good couple of years. But Zlatan, for me, he's more of a team player.
But never ever heard that before.
But I was like, Nathan's going to run off of this set.
He's a better player in the dressing room. He leads by example. And Ronaldo
does. Going to run off this.
Ronaldo does in many ways in terms of the way he looks after himself physically, but you can't say he's led by example this year with the way he's behaved. Yeah. I think Zlatan is the consummate professional. And the word I got at Man United when he was there was that he was fantastic around the club. Everyone at the club loved him, thought he was great. The young players looked up to him, and Zlatan really kind of built into that. Ronaldo's not a Zlatan in that respect. Ronaldo is very much Ronaldo. It's Project Ronaldo. And I think that's what clubs are looking at, thinking, do we need this? And there aren't any more, I won't say stupid clubs, that's wrong, but clubs that throw money around without thinking of the consequences. They've all got sensible now, and there are more sensible clubs. And I don't see a club out there right now that is naive enough and silly enough to throw lots of money at Ronaldo, because they're all, like Nathan says, planning for the long term.
Do you think, though, sorry to interrupt, so if we believe that Ronaldo is intelligent in terms of how he's trying to portray himself, then is this interview coming at a time where maybe he thinks he knows something that's going to happen in January that we don't?
Well, what can happen in January? I think he's hoping that he has a good World Cup.
And think he's relying on hope? That's his strategy?
Hope and the fact that, yeah, I do actually, because what the options are, playing his playing career in the Middle East, Qatar, Saudi Arabia.
But for me, sorry Alexis, but for me, this is my show now.
Nina Mara tried to take my job, but no problem.
You think, some people perceive the fact that United are thinking about cancelling his contract as being like a real negative against Ronaldo, but you can see Ronaldo doesn't want to be there, because if he did, he wouldn't behave the way that he has in this last week. Mm. So clearly there's something in my mind that he's maybe keeping away from people, which perhaps is going to maybe catch us off guard. It might not be one of the top clubs that we think of, but I think he knows
he has something planned.
No, but I think big players like Ronaldo, Messi, Robert Lewandowski and stuff, they're so big now, they know that they can find something. And all Messi left Barca under a cloud, didn't end well, did it? Lewandowski left Bayern under a cloud, didn't end well. These players are now so, Wayne Rooney at United had a lot of issues. There are a lot of players now that are so big, and all maybe bigger than the club. Like you were saying about, Ronaldo's got more Instagram followers, the whole of the Premier League clubs put together. These players are so big now that they know that they control their destiny, not the clubs. Yeah. And it's an unsavoury way for it to end, but you're suggesting that there's a path to somewhere. I don't know where that path leads with Ronaldo. Yeah, I really don't. Sure.
Well, our producer says, thank goodness we are probably out of time, so Nadim can stop trying to take my job out here. We've seen Nadim the host. We get it. You like being on TV. But, I want to put some more respect on Nadim's name, because let's never forget Nadim the footballer, because out here in Doha, man has been balling, though.
Well.
He has been balling. It was Team Nadim up against Team Julien Laurens. We know Julien loves to talk a big game. But,
Nate,
five goals.
Yeah, so I did score five. I did score five of the six goals that we scored. But we did lose. We did concede 10. But Julian was good. Rodrigo Faiz,
he
was good.
As good as he makes himself.
Seb Salazar, other host, was good. He thought Julian, he believes that he's good. And in fairness, he has something. He has that little bit of je ne sais quoi.
Hello.
Yes, he has a little bit of something. But the team that we had today on my side, we didn't have the sort of top-ranking players. We tried. We did well, but ultimately everyone enjoyed themselves, and that was the most important thing. The conditions were very tough, and at times I had to defend, sometimes I had to score five of the six goals, but ultimately we had a good time.
He's talking about himself like Ronaldo.
Didn't have enough of the top-ranked players.
Speak to anybody on my team. Speak to anybody who was on my team and ask if they enjoyed themselves.
So he's just throwing all our producers and all our great staff here at ESPN under the bus just now. All right, but that's enough that we have for this segment. There's going to be plenty more of these boys getting out on the pitch in this Doha heat. I even asked them to be a part, but apparently they don't rate me enough, so we'll see if I ever get my chance. I told them, stick me in goal. Jamaicans are good at goalkeeping.
Nah, not you though.
No. Oh, have you ever seen me?
Yeah.
You've never even seen me.
You were asleep when we kicked off.
I'm just asking for a chance. I'm just asking for a chance. In the meantime, back to you, Kay.
Come on, guys. Give Alexis a chance. And by the way, Nadim, the only professional name that I heard there, the rest were journalists, producers. Don't be getting on your high horse about that one.
And whatever it said
is. Group H, Portugal's group. It's a tough and unpredictable group. Ghana, Uruguay and South Korea are also in it. Portugal's first game is against Ghana on Thursday. ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're
I hope you are, because we've got extra time coming up.
Oh, it's off.
And you're going to some tweets, aren't you? So stick around. He's not done yet. Neither are we. See you in just a second. This is FC Extra Time, brought to you by Globant. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you so much for sending in your questions. We have Ale, Stevie and Shaka here with us.
Are you laughing?
That's a cheeky face.
No, you started laughing.
No,
I don't know what.
I can tell. Something's
happening.
You're up to mischief today. I can already see it. Ale, who'll have the most successful World Cup? Mbappe, Messi or Neymar?
Given the fact that I picked Brazil to win the World Cup, I would imagine that we are judging success by who wins the competition. So therefore, even if Neymar sits on the bench every single game for Brazil and does nothing, if they go on to win it, he would have had a more successful World Cup.
Stevie?
That's a strange way of looking at it. Isn't it? Even if he doesn't kick a ball, he'll have it. And they win, Brazil wins the World Cup, he'll have had a more successful World Cup.
And so, do you disagree?
Well, he'll go home with a World Cup winner's medal.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that Nedum's interior decorator doesn't really. That's not what he was looking for.
What are you looking for, Stevie?
Clearly, you have a very. Well, Nedum's interior decorator.
See, here's the thing. What happens if? Just to be devil's advocate.
Okay.
What happens if Neymar scores a hat-trick in every game up until the semi-final and they lose to Argentina 1-0?
Right.
And Argentina have been rotten and scraped through on all kinds of nonsense, penalties and just boring. And Argentina wins the World Cup. Is the answer going to be Messi?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so
100%.
I would have said Neymar. Anyway.
Your devil is weak sauce, man.
Well, I'm not so sure scoring a hat trick in every single game up until the semi-final is weak sauce. I'm not sure.
but it is still the same name anyway, Neymar.
Hi. I meant. Did I say Neymar?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I didn't mean to say
that. You said it now, Shaka.
I've said it now. I didn't mean. That's
Neymar
not what I meant.
Scoring hat tricks on
that's
a plane.
That's not what
at all.
I meant.
All right.
So what did you mean? No, please explain yourself.
Hold on.
Stop digging. I'll come back in.
Just have a think and I'll come back.
It's all right.
Goodness me.
You ask the question
right,
again.
I've got it. As I said, if Argentina wins it, You can't say Messi's had the best one if Neymar scored a hat-trick in every game leading up to semi-final. So I was actually right what I said.
So what did you say?
What? Give me a name, Stevie. Mbappe Messi.
Just one name. Just give us one name. Just nothing else. Do what an explanation of any sort.
I'm really confused.
You're playing it up quite well.
Are you just going to move to the next question?
All right. I want to track it to
the I'm going to say Lionel Messi for all the reasons that Ali offered, but I think Argentina win the World Cup. I'm trying to forget what Stevie said.
And so is he.
So am I. So am I.
Oh, my goodness. Next question. Ale, will Spain's downfall be due to not having a consistent quality striker such as Aspas, Joselu or Iglesias in the squad?
Yes. Part of it will be that, and that has been a question for time and time and time again for Spain in this tournament, is that you look out there and it's still Álvaro Morata. Whatever you may think of Morata, it's still him. He's still the answer. And then the options you just mentioned, Aspas, Borja Iglesias, Joselu, good players. And Aspas has been really productive for Celta de Vigo. But again, at the World Cup level, final stages of the competition, are these guys that you're trusting to score the goals? Obviously, they're not part of the team, so they weren't even part of the discussion. So it's still down to Álvaro Morata. Regardless of what they do in the attacking half, defensively, they still have questions. And that's also a problem for Spain. We like to talk about what they don't have in the attacking half. What they do have in the back line is not something that you can trust either.
I'm going nowhere near Stevie with three-name question again there. For Stevie, though, start, bench, or sell? John Jameson.
That's a three-name question.
Bernie Slaven. Both at their prime. Or a 38-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, see ya. Start, who do you start?
Can we offer some context for anything?
Yes.
Well, hold on a second. So you got John Jameson and Bernie at the peak.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Or Cristiano at 38.
Uh-huh. The current version of Cristiano.
Right. Well, right now it seems as though you can't get anything for Ronaldo. So I'm going to have to keep him.
You can't get any. What do you mean? 350 million for 2 years in Saudi Arabia is not enough.
And the transfer. You got to transfer him, right? Nobody wants him. Nobody's offered a penny for him.
Yes, he's nobody's offered $350 million.
No, that's his contract. That's not a transfer fee. That's not a transfer fee. Start bench yourself. How can you sell somebody that nobody's offered any money for?
I've just told you that there's been many offers.
No, they haven't. No, they're not. Get it right. They've offered him a contract.
Right.
Well, that's not. That's. They haven't bought him.
All right.
What have they given Man United?
So you don't want to sell him for 350 million?
You can't sell him for anything. Nobody will buy him. They might give him a contract. What are you talking about? Hey, how are we going to sell somebody that nobody wants?
We're bearing the lead here.
Nobody's going to buy him.
John Jameson and Bernie Slaven.
Nobody's going to buy him.
What are you trying to get to anyway?
No. Get it right. Let's get this right. Just because the Saudis have got so much money, they can't give it away, and they're going to pay him 350 mil... they're not buying them, right?
Right.
Well, how can I sell somebody
well,
if nobody will buy
negotiate.
Them?
If they're willing to offer that right, piece,
well,
Stevie,
not,
you might
we'll
be
give you 350
negotiate.
Million, but we're not paying a penny for you. So there's no point in me selling them, is there? If I'm not going to get a penny for them, what's the point?
Are you just trying to say you're going to start Cristiano Ronaldo?
I never said that. I'll bench him and then bring him on with 3 minutes to go. If he'll come on.
Who could this be?
Right, but who's starting, though?
Oh, John Jameson starts. Okay. What a stupid question. John Jameson starts. Who's starting? Yeah. Bernie's getting sold and Ronaldo's on the bench. Easiest question of the day.
Well, you made it seem that way.
Stevie compared Cristiano Ronaldo to John Jameson of Troon Juniors,
yes.
And Bernie Slaven of Middlesbrough fame.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so this is why we've been asked this question, in case you missed that show. Saying that every team has their legend.
Everybody has the legend. Someone more famous than others. I.e. Mr. Jameson. Probably not known outside of Truen.
It was a great question. I'm sure they weren't expecting quite the answer.
Well, you're
giving him
the problem is I can see your face.
You still
think I'm wrong about Sell. I wouldn't sell him. I can see it in your face.
You just want to
but nobody's offered a penny for him, and nobody will. why would I sell him if I don't get him for him?
Yes, please,
serious question. Who's going to offer a penny for a John Jameson or Benny Slogan?
At the best.
Right now.
At the best.
Whatever the
that
best
was the question.
Is right now.
The question was at the best, right?
Yes.
Well, there you go, Benny Slogan.
I thought you said John Jameson.
No, he plays.
Oh, okay. He starts.
Absolutely. Stupid question. Of course John Jameson starts.
If you're confused, you so are we.
Don't be so silly.
All right, next question.
Stupid boy.
Next question.
We've got one question left, actually, and there's two to choose from here. I'm just checking which one it is. I think it's this Argentina one. If Argentina wins the World Cup...
Then Neymar's the best player.
Should Leo Messi just retire while at the peak instead of dragging it like someone else?
Like who else?
Mm. Well, he will, won't he?
John Jameson.
Prune Junior.
He will.
No, he will. He will. No.
I'm talking about internationally. What? Internationally, he should. If he wins it, that should be his last game. He should turn around and say, done.
Oh, yeah. But that's not what I got from the question. I thought it just meant, that's it. Just right off into the sunset.
I'm definitely taking these questions a different way than everybody else.
Yes,
well, yeah.
That wasn't obvious.
I actually thought that was really clear, that it was about international football and not just packing the whole thing in. But
no, I don't think I thought generally.
I don't even let you go down any road right now.
Let's go home.
Tomorrow's another day.
Just don't explain your answer.
Tomorrow is the kickoff of the World Cup in Qatar. Against Ecuador, the opening game. We will be back on ESPN FC tomorrow, live from 6, with a look back on everything that happened in that first game.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.